I trust, you know, I shouldn't. There's no other place I want to be. And I'm okay if the Lord doesn't want me to preach or whatever. I'll be giving somebody else a call this Easter. Would you stink and answer your phone if it's 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning? Some of you guys, you know, that would super help me. All right, Genesis 38. Genesis 38, it's about, you know, 2.5 columns, but it'll keep your attention. Genesis 38, let's read through this. I'm going to read through the entire story, and then title the message, Ignoring God and Indulging the Flesh. I think that's the theme, and I'll tell you this, I appreciate the placement of this chapter, and when I finish up tonight, I think so will you. It's so truly fascinating. Genesis chapter 38, and it came to pass, just real quick, remember last time, Genesis 37, Joseph gets sold into slavery. Joseph and his brothers, they were going to kill him, and so God didn't allow that. Then he was sold into slavery into a man named Potiphar's house. We'll pick up there next week in Genesis 39. Genesis 38, just so you know, it may have happened after 37, but it's going to extend longer. It's going to overlap more than where we would be in 39, because you're going to see there's going to be children born, and they're going to grow up, and then they're going to get married. So this is kind of just a inserted in history of Israel, and not so glamorous history. Genesis chapter 38, verse 1. And it came to pass at that time that Judah, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, one of the 12 sons of Israel, that Judah went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. And he took her and went in unto her. And she conceived and bare a son, and he called his name Ur. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she called his name Onan. And she yet again conceived and bare a son and called his name Shelah. And he was at Kizib when she bare him. And Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. The Lord killed him. That's what the word slew means in verse 8. And Judah said unto Onan, go in unto thy brother's wife, and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother. And Onan knew that the seed should not be his. And it came to pass when he went in unto his brother's wife that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother. Verse 10. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him also. So God kills Ur, God kills Onan. Verse 11. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah, his third son, Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. And in process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was comforted and went up unto his sheep shearers to Timnath, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear his sheep. And she put her widow's garments off from her, and covered her with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place, which is by the way to Timnath, for she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife. Verse 15. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be an harlot, because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way, and said, go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee, for he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what wilt thou give me that thou mayest come in unto me? What are you going to pay me? That's what she said. Verse 17. And he said, I will send thee a kid from the flock. I'm going to send you a sheep, a goat. And she said, wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? So she said, okay, how can I know you're going to give me a sheep or a goat? How can I know that? You need to leave something, a little collateral, right? That's what she's asking for there. And he said, what pledge shall I give thee? And she said, thy signet and thy bracelets and thy staff. So like a ring, bracelets, and a staff that is in thine hand. And he gave it her and came in unto her, and she conceived by him. You understand, she conceived by her father-in-law, evil, wicked. And she arose and went away and laid by her veil from her and put on the garments of her widowhood. She goes back to kind of just in her mourning state, and she would wear these garments that would tell everybody, I'm a widow. Verse 20, and Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend the Adullamite to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he found her not. No, this is just gets messy. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside? And they said, there was no harlot in this place. And he returned to Judah and said, I cannot find her. So, you know, his friend, the Adullamite, returned and said, I can't find her. And also the men of the place said, there was no harlot in this place. And Judah said, let her take it to her. So he said, let it be on her. That's what he means by that. Lest we be shamed. He said, I am not going to keep investigating this because I'm not really that interested in everybody knowing my business. So let her take it to her. Let it be on her. Lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid and thou hast not found her. So just for my front row scholars, a kid is not something like you guys. It'd be a kid of the goats, kid of the lambs. So it'd be, you know, a young sheep, a young goat. Verse 24. And it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are am I with child. And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet and bracelets and staff. And Judah acknowledged them and said, she hath been more righteous than I. Light me on fire. No, that's not what he said. Because that I gave her not to Shelah, my son, and he knew her again no more. Verse 27. And it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. It came to pass, these are twins by Judah. It came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand. Just a scene. I love the details of the Bible. Schwink, he sticks out his hand. And the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread. So, you know, he sticks his hand out and she's like, firstborn, right? I don't really think that's how it works, but she did that. And so she ties a scarlet thread around saying, this came out first. It came to pass as he drew back his hand that, behold, his brother came out. And she said, like you and I are thinking, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee. Therefore his name was Phares. And afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was Zerah. Again, title of the message, Ignoring God and Indulging the Flesh. I think that's really the theme of this. And I think there's much for us to learn. Let's just break down this chapter and walk through these verses. Verses 1 through 5. Oh, wait, Frank. Did I do that? Did I not? Okay. So whoever did these slides, right? So you're going to get your first 2 points. Not that you're going to learn much from them. But Judah marries a Canaanite woman. Look at this in verse 1 and 2. And it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. And he took her. And I'm going to tell you, he probably took her as a wife, right? So I don't think this was anything beyond that. And went in unto her. So he took her as a wife, went into her, and boom, she has 3 children. And I just the highlight here is God had instructed them to be separate from the Canaanites. And what we see throughout all of this early history of Israel, and particularly the sons, did they keep themselves from the Canaanites? No. It was an absolute mess, absolute disaster. But here's the simple key. If you hang out and live among the Canaanites, don't be surprised if your kids marry Canaanites. It's just a simple principle. Who you live with, who you hang around, who you fellowship, who you walk with, don't be surprised when your kids marry those people. It'll be no surprise later when they finally do get into the promised land why God said, okay. And it was righteous judgment from God. Shocking, shocking that he said, destroy them all, kill them all. And he did that because he was bringing judgment upon them as nations that he had warned for centuries. His goodness, his mercy, his grace had warned them. And they had rejected him for centuries upon centuries. And then he brings Israel in and to destroy them, not only to bring judgment, but for their benefit as well. Because what became a thorn in the flesh for Israel for centuries to come? The people that they didn't destroy and obey God with. A simple principle. You can talk all day long about who your kids should and shouldn't marry. You should probably be paying attention to who your kids are hanging out with. That's what matters. You should be paying attention even at church. I want us to be a place of refuge for all people. And I'm going to hang out with them all. Your kids maybe ought not to. You understand? Just be alert. Don't be judging people when they come in. Just be alert. Pay attention. Make sure you're in charge of who your kids hang out with. You follow me? I do not want us to be a church that's like, oh man, look at that guy. No, that's not what I want at all. I'm just telling you, you have to pay attention and be alert with your children at all times. There is no time to let your guard down. Make sense? It's a serious job. It's a big deal. And who your kids marry will impact their life way more than you could ever imagine. I didn't know everything I was doing, but it's been good for me. You know, I tell people this all the time. I'm going to get in trouble, but my wife's not here, right? I tell people this all the time. You just tell me, probably shouldn't say it in front of her. I tell people all the time, marriage is good, it's just not all it's cracked up to be. Jesus is better. Jesus isn't nearly as much work as marriage is. Is that terrible to say? Having kids is a great thing, it's just not all it's cracked up to be. Should I not say that? Jesus is way better. He's who I'll have in eternity. I'm not going to have family reunions up in heaven. You understand that? I'm just telling you, it is, enjoy the Lord, but you've got a job with your family. You guys, I can't read you tonight. Was that shocking? Am I in trouble because my wife's probably watching this tonight? I'm telling you this, I love my wife, and she's the best thing outside of Jesus Christ ever to happen to me. And I needed her. I needed her more than she needed me. There is no doubt about it. And, I mean, she runs me. She just bucks at that when I say that. I just love that she's not here right now, only for this service. I wish she was here because I'm so tired of Wendy's. But it's good. Now, verses 6 through 10, Ur and Onan's rebellion and death. I want you to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 25. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. The fifth book in the Bible, Deuteronomy chapter 25. Because for some of you, this whole concept. So here's what we have. We have Judah. He has three children, Onan, and Shelah, right? And he has these three children, and he's going to get a wife for his oldest, And the Bible doesn't tell us what he did, but did something so egregious. Understand this. I had a good time this week. And if this was Sunday school, we'd have a great time. It is a rare occurrence in the Bible for God to say, boom, you're dead. Folks, it's like a half a dozen times. And I mean, it's not that many. We're going to go through some of them. I'll talk about them. So whatever did, erred. and he, God is not a quick trigger that loses his temper. Don't you ever think that. He's fully in control. He's perfect in all that he does. Whatever did, he deserved the death. And then this is the shocking part, but I think many of you understand this. I want you to see it in the Bible. And Deuteronomy came later, but this was a clear principle that God had given. We'll cover Deuteronomy chapter 25, then I'll talk about it. Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 5. Deuteronomy 25, 5. It's the principle that if a man marries a woman and he has brothers, then and that man dies, then the brothers will take the role of the husband if they, and the Bible's not talking about polygamy here, if they're single and if they agree. You'll see this in Deuteronomy 25:5. It says this: if brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, it's key, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. So she's not to go marry a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother unto her. I've told you, you've heard me say this before, you will get much more involved in who your brother marries when this is the case, right? But this is God caring and taking care of women. It's an amazing care of God. It's not something weird. It's because Tamar in her widowhood was somewhat doomed, and she was under the authority of Judah, her father-in-law, and had to listen to him. She didn't fully listen to him all the time, but it is, this is God caring, right? And it's that, and so understand this, when Onan refused to do his responsibility before the Lord, he knew that if Tamar were to conceive, that that first son would not be his heir. It would be raising up seed in the name of Ur. Look, verse 6. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. I think that's what Onan's issue was. It's like, I'm not going to have a son that's not my heir. And if a man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. So there is an out. Verse 8. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he shall stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off his foot and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto the man that will not build up his brother's house, and then his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that hath loosed his shoe. Now you may think that's silly, but it would have been a stigma that no man wanted. And so I'm just telling you, that's what the, but, so Onan had the opportunity to have an out, but what he did, he indulged the flesh and avoided honoring God with the responsibility. You following me? That's the sin, and it's a sin that you and I, and we're going to look at, I'm just going to quickly look at the six that I saw. I've seen some list, Lot's wife, I don't know, I mean, she turned into salt, but, you know, I don't know if that's God striking her down, but maybe if you want to include Lot's wife, I'm not. I include it when God said, twink, he struck them down and killed them. And so, look at this, just to remind you, look at this. Look at verse 7. And Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. I mean, you had to be some kind of wicked. Did the Lord kill Cain? No. There's so many people God didn't kill. This guy did something evil, and then Onan as well, following in the footsteps of his brother. But here's just a few examples of people that God, he struck down right away. Nadab and Abihu. Nadab and Abihu, sons of Aaron the high priest. Listen to Leviticus 10:1-2. It talks about this. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire thereon and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord. They did not do it the way God had said, and they were making it a game. And offered strange fire before the Lord. There's a whole lot of, I'm not going to go into all the, what is the strange fire? Strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not, and there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. You got you got Onan, quink, then you got Nadab and Abihu. Then you got Hophni and Phinehas, right? Got Hophni and Phinehas, again, sons of Eli the high priest. And just turn over with me. I don't think I put this in the notes. I didn't know. Okay. Turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2. I want you to see this. I want you to see how the Bible describes Hophni and Phinehas. My wife always says, is that how you guys pronounce them or no? People, she always, when I come back with Phinehas, she goes, that's not how you do it. But I'm like, you know, I had a preacher when I grew up, it was Phareo. I'm like, okay, I'm not that bad. But Anybody else hear a preacher say Pharaoh? No, my preacher did. I knew, you know, so. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial, sons of the devil. They knew not the Lord, verse 13. And the priest's custom was with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servants came while the flesh was in seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand, and he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh and unto all the Israelites that came thither. Also before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and said to the man that sacrificed, give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw. And if any man said unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth, then he would answer them, nay, but thou shalt give it me now. And if not, I will take it by force. Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. They made people disdain what God had had as a picture of the sacrifice of Christ, and they made people abhor the offering of the Lord. Now just jump over to verse 22 of that same chapter. Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto Israel and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Women coming to worship the Lord, they would sleep with. Just evil. Then look over to verse 25, a kind of a prophecy. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. And then look at 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 34. And this shall be a sign unto thee that shall come upon thy two sons on Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them. I think this is another instance, not the instant, but that these men sinned against the Lord. And it's very interesting to me. They sinned against the Lord. They ignored God's honor and satisfied their flesh. Then, you guys, we've talked about him recently, Uzzah. Uzzah was a Levite. 2 Samuel chapter 6, remember this? They were taking the Ark of the Covenant back to Israel. They were supposed to carry it on staves. And as a Levite, he would have known that, on poles. And this is tough. The ark began to fall, and Uzzah reached out to stabilize it. And it says in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 7, 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 7, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God smote him there for his error. And there he died by the ark of God. Again, it was a spiritual setting, and he did what was right in his own eyes versus what was right before God. And then I think this is probably one. Nabal, you guys know the story of Nabal. Turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 25. Nabal was Abigail's husband. Nabal means fool. And you always wonder, did your parents name him knowing that's the name, or did he become fool after Nabal? 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 36. And so David had come up, David and his men, and they were hungry, and Nabal was wealthy. Nabal could have helped them, could take care of them. And Nabal did not minister unto David and his men. And Abigail, though, was a woman of wisdom. 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 36. And Abigail came to Nabal, and she told him all that she'd done. So she made a feast for David and his men. She provided them with food, and it satisfied David's anger. He was going to kill Nabal and the whole family. And Abigail ran out and helped appease David's anger. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house like the feast of a king. This is 1 Samuel 25, 36. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken. Wherefore she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light. But it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. Sounds like he had a stroke. And then, and it came to pass after 10 days after that, the Lord smote Nabal, and he died. And then two in the New Testament, Ananias and Sapphira, Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira. The Bible uses this term, they lied to the Holy Ghost. Remember, they had sold a piece of property, and they had represented as though they gave all that money to the church at Jerusalem, and they held some back. And Peter told him, well, it was yours. You didn't have to give any of it. But when they represented something spiritual that was not, and I think this is kind of a theme coming across this, right? It is God first, Ananias was first dead. Why did you lie to the Holy Ghost? He drops dead. Then Sapphira comes home and she tells the same story and she dropped dead. Very, very fascinating in Acts chapter 5. And then the final one that I see is Herod. Herod, just listen to Acts chapter 12, verse 23. Herod, and immediately, this would be Herod Antipas, I believe, and immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. So he had made a speech, and they had said, oh, this is a speech from the gods, and he received the glory, and he didn't glorify God, and the Lord smote him. I tell you all this to say, it is not, because I just wanted you to reflect. And Onan did something terribly egregious. And so then I've sat and I've pondered. I don't still know if I have what all of this is about. I'm going to have a top-line conclusion, and then there could be some thoughts. But it is ignoring God's honor for my pleasure. You see, I Nadab and Abihu would fit with that. Hophni and Phinehas would fit with that. Nabal just was like, stingy, selfish. Ananias and Sapphira wanted the glory for themselves, indulging their pride, the pride of life, and looking spiritual. And Herod just was lost and never gave God the glory at all. So personal pleasure above God's honor. It is, and I think we need to think about this. It is what God wants is just simple obedience. What was asked of Onan was not that big a deal. And I don't know if all of the details of Deuteronomy chapter 25 were in place at the time of Onan, but I would believe there was a way for him to say, no, I do not want to take the responsibility of taking my brother's wife. I trust that. That would be reasonable. But what he did is he said, no, I will satisfy the flesh and I will ignore my responsibility. And God said, not having it. I think some things for us to learn from these characters in this crazy story, right? So then, what happens is, let's look at what Judah tells Tamar. So here's poor Tamar. Her first husband, God kills him. The brother lasts one night, I guess, and God kills him. And then apparently Sheila was too young to marry her. And Judah says, just look at this. Look at verse 11. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Sheila my son be grown, for he said, lest peradventure he die also. Starting to get superstitious, not realizing that what God did was right, what God did was just. You should really investigate this, Judah, and see how you respond to God. But all of a sudden he says, lest peradventure he die also, as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. And so he in essence lied to her, right? So here's what I want you to see, Judah's mistreatment of Tamar. By all evidence, he had no intents of having Sheila marry Tamar. Tamar waited, however long that was, the Bible doesn't tell us. Remember this, Tamar was a Canaanite. Now, I'm going to say this before she truly shows her colors of being a Canaanite. At this point, she was more honorable than Judah. Judah said, go home to your father's house and wait, and I will give you my third son, and he will be your wife and raise up seed unto our name. And she went and obeyed. Then he didn't listen. He didn't follow through, right? So all of a sudden, you're going to see Tamar's deceit. And look at this in verse 12. In the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. So Judah's wife died. And Judah was comforted and went up unto his sheep shears to Timnath he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, "Behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear his sheep." You can kind of see this is probably not, you know, just be aware. Ask this question when people tell you things. Why are you telling me? Are you trying to stir me up so I go do something stupid? Right? Just be careful. You know, I mean, if you don't need to know, say, "I don't need to know. I don't want to talk about it anymore." I mean, somebody came up to Tamar, stirring the pot, right? And maybe Tamar had been talking there. You got Judah. You know, but she said, "Behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear the sheep." And so what Tamar does, Tamar then, look at verse 14, and she put her widow's garments off from her. So the widow's garments, I don't know, I haven't researched it, but, you know, today it would be black and you'd be obvious that you were in mourning, and this is years later. And she took those off and covered her with a veil, not only so she couldn't be seen, but that would also would represent harlotry, right? And she covered her with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in an open place looking for one man. Now, you know what's so sad? She knew her customer, did she not? She sat by the wayside looking for one guy. It's like going fishing in a pond with one fish. But she knew that fish would bite. What a terrible testimony for Judah. Does the devil know you? You know, I'm telling you, we should flee, whether it's fornication, we should flee sin. Ask God that the devil will not be able to predict you. And I'm telling you, she sat there and she caught that only fish in the pond. And so, look at verse 15. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be an harlot because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, "Go, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee," for he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, "What wilt thou give me?" And you know the story. She deceives him. Deceives him and says, "Well, you know," he said, "I'm going to give you a kid of the goats. I'm going to give you a kid of the flock." Right? And so he says that. And she said, "How do I know?" And then he gives her, you know, a signet, bracelets, and the staff. And she conceived twins. He goes in and indulges the flesh. That's the title of our message. No care, no responsibility, and leaves. And then he tries to repay because he's going to send the kid of the flock, and he's trying to be an honorable man that's not an honorable man. I mean, kind of weird, right? And so he sends his friend Hira and says, "Hey, go find this woman." You got to know his heart dropped. Kind of like David's did. When David got the old note, "I'm with child." There was no harlot here. What? And he said, "Stop the search. I'm not going to make myself shamed before all the people. Stop the search." What I want you to see, though, is Judah's hypocrisy. Look at verse 24. "It came to pass about 3 months after." So I guess, is 3 months the typical time that a woman will be showing? Is that about right? Is that kind of? Unless you have twins, it's like 3 days, right? Or something, right? But is 3 months kind of, I don't know. Is it, no, you show them before 3 months? 3 months kind of maybe? Some people are 5 months. It all depends, right? But apparently Tamar. And it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, "Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom." And Judah said, "Bring her and let her be burnt." This is a perfect example of Matthew 7, hypocrisy. Judge not lest ye be judged. I want you to understand Matthew chapter 7. This is the illustration of Matthew chapter 7, hypocrisy. I want you to understand this. This is just a quick freebie tonight. So I want to ask you this. Zach, are we to judge people? Maybe. Not one of the options. Yes or no. But there's a righteous way to do it and there's an unrighteous way to do it, right? So maybe would have been a better answer. I don't know why you didn't tell us that. Understand this. We are not, here's this will be the third one, so I'll just deal with this. The Bible says, judge not according to appearance. Red and yellow, black and white, fat and thin, tall and short, any ethnic perspective that you have, we are wrong to judge people for any appearance whatsoever, period. You understand that? That's sin. God makes that so crystal clear. The Jews hated the Gentiles hated the Jews, and the devil has always been trying to divide humanity. We are wrong to judge people according to appearance. That's sinful judgment. The Bible also talks about hypocritical judgment. We'll get there in Matthew 7, but it also talks about judgment where you puff yourself up and put others down. We are never to judge others to put them down and to puff ourselves up, to lift ourselves up. That would be sin. We are not to judge others to put them down. But the Bible says that we are to judge righteous judgment. In that same verse that says that we are to judge not according to appearance, it says in the second half, judge righteous judgment. I want you to understand, what is judgment? It's discernment. I ask people all the time, I'll say, do you judge? And they're like, no, I don't. And I'll say, well, then don't drive. You have to have judgment when you drive. But judgment to put somebody down, that's evil. That's sin. That is not what a Christian should do. You know, I've had people, you know, I've told you this many times, they go, well, you're judging me. And I go, well, you're judging me, then I'm judging you. Right? And then I'll just tell them this. You know, here's what I tell people. They're like, well, you're judging me. I go, no, just sent from heaven. I'm a fruit inspector. I see no fruit on this tree. Right? And so, then they don't know what to say. I say, I'm only doing this to care for you. Do you know this? I try to determine where people are spiritually as quickly as I can so that I can better minister to them and try to have discernment so I can help them eternally. It's not to look down on them. I want you to understand this. The older I get, the more likely is it guaranteed I've sinned more than anybody I'm talking to. Right? Just, oh yes, Ron. Oh yes, yes, Ron. It's not apples and oranges. I've got all kinds of time, and I have, you know, 59 years times 365 days times how many times a day that I have not perfectly thought, loved my neighbor and loved the Lord. It is, we don't appreciate sin for you to say no. It is, sin is missing the mark of perfection. I miss the mark of perfection more than I can ever imagine. And when you accumulate it over the years, most people I meet, I know I've sinned more than them. But here, this is hypocritical judgment. Look at Matthew chapter 7. I want you to understand Matthew chapter 7. Remember this, what did Judas say? Let her be burned! This reminds me of John chapter 8, right? When they caught the woman in adultery, where's the dude? You know what, I'm going to guess his name was Judah. Right? Oh, cast stones at her. But look at Matthew 7. He says, judge not that you be not judged. It's telling you, you know what? You want to go around judging people? You're going to get it back. You're going to reap what you sow. Judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And with what measure you meet, it shall be measured to you again. What you dish out, you're going to get. And he says, why beholdest thou the mote or the splinter? Why beholdest thou the mote or the splinter that is in thy brother's eye? So it's like, you got a splinter in your eye, man. Right? But considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye. I'm like, womp. I got a beam and you got a splinter. What should I take care of first? He says, or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye. Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam of thine own eye, and thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote of thy brother's eye. Let me tell you, I want to make sure of this. We never have the right to cast the first stone. There are going to be things that happen in our church that are going to be terrible. We're going to love people, and we will not cast the first stone. Where it gets difficult is where people won't repent. But I'll tell you this, when somebody repents, we forgive, we embrace, and we love. You understand that? And they will have no stigmas. And we have to work on that. Do you understand that? It's critical. It's critical that we not look at others differently. When God forgives, we should forgive, and it should be restored. Understand that? But here's the problem that we have. This old flesh wants to prove I'm better than you. I'm better than you. You scallywag, right? And we have to fight that. It's called pride. It's called sin. This is not a competition. You know what? We ought to rejoice when God uses anybody in this room, when God forgives anybody in this room, and we better not have the spirit of Judah. That's the spirit of the devil. You understand this? Let her be burned. And he was the one that had her be with child. Complete hypocrisy. I'm going to finish with this, and it's pretty cool. Verses 27 through 30. Has there anything been good thus far? 27 through 30 is extremely encouraging. God's amazing grace. Did you guys see that in verse 27 through 30? Just look at verse 27. And it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. Super interesting, right? What's interesting is, I don't know, when did they find out you had twins? They'd be like, whoa, Tamar! Been eating that goat's milk, huh? And I mean, but you know, it's like, did they find out? Oh, there's another one coming. I mean, kind of like, you know, when cows have any pigs, they don't know how many coming out. I don't know. But it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, and doesn't it sound like, behold, whoa, twins were in her womb. It came to pass when she travailed that the one, we saw the story. So she has these twins. Let me show you this. Do you know this? Tamar and Phares are the line of Christ. Look at Matthew chapter 1. This is Joseph's line linking back to David. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac. Amen. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judah. The reason it's Judas is because it's transliterated from Greek to English. Jacob begat Judah and his brethren. And Judah begat Phares and Zerah of Tamar. And Phares begat Esrom, and it goes on and on and on. And you get all the way down through David, and then you get to Jesus as the genealogies continue. You know what's so amazing? What would people suggest to Tamar today? Have an abortion. Let me tell you, this is one of those situations that people would call an exception today, is it not? Well, Steve, what if the father-in-law impregnates the daughter-in-law and they unknowingly, who's the giver of life? Let me tell you, when God gives life, you have no clue what God will do. And we trust the Lord in all circumstances. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. The stigma that Tamar would have had, the stigma that these children would have had. But I'll tell you what, we serve a great God, a bigger God, a merciful God, a gracious God, and he brought good out of it. Finish with this, and it looks like I'm going to finish a little early, which would be fun. Why I think, I saw one line, and I've just had a ball with it this week. And it wasn't even talking about why Genesis 38 is where it's at. But Genesis 38 is positioned between 37 and 39. Genius. But it's between Egypt. Thus far was God's plan, having them come to Canaan, be a separate nation from the people. Was it working? It wasn't. He had a plan. And it began with Joseph. Here's what God said. And it'll help you understand. Have you ever thought of this? I've heard people say this. I'm not sure if I would want to believe in a God that had my people in slavery for 400 years. Have any of you ever heard that? I've heard that. I'll tell you, now you have a response. And this is so important for us. What would you rather do? Zach, you want me to ask more questions today. Zach, what would you rather do? Obey God or be put in slavery? Obey God. But Zach, let me ask you this. If you won't obey God, and the only way that he would get you to obey him was slavery, I think you'd push the button, scared half to death, but I think you want to honor God, right? You know how God separated Israel? He took him to Egypt. 400 years. There was no intermingling going on with the Egyptians. They were in Goshen, and the Egyptians were like, those shepherds over there. 400 years, 2 to 3 million people. They were Jewish. You got to understand this. That's the goodness of God. The devil was involved in chapter 38. The devil was trying to destroy the line of Christ. The devil thought, look what I got Judah to do. And God says, thank you very much. That was evil and sin, but all things work together for good to those that love God. Let me help you. The next time you wonder why Israel spent 400 years in bondage in Egypt, one of the reasons I believe is so that they would be a separated people. And they would come out a nation that was separated from all of the nations. Now I'm telling you, you know how they could have avoided bondage? Obey. But I'll tell you, every believer in here, have you ever prayed this prayer? Oh God, whatever it takes, make me obey. Anybody ever pray that? Okay, not many. I have. And I, you know, I think that sometimes, and I'm like, okay, that's not your way, but maybe you can make an exception here. When I'm dead, you know what I wish I had done? Obeyed better. I don't want to be a slave. I don't want to be imprisoned. I don't want to be beaten. I don't want to be shackled. But I will tell you this, when I'm dead, I wish I had obeyed. Chapter 38 is in the middle of Joseph going to Egypt. God got the separation for his people, did he not? Not the way they would have asked. There would have been a way, obedience. Let God be true and every man a liar. There's not one saved Jewish person that is in heaven today that would disagree, that says, if it took bondage to honor God and to help maintain the purity, even though God's goodness and God's mercy is throughout the line of Christ, is it not? If you get one thing from this message, just know this, God can use you. He's not worried about what your past is. Do you understand that? It's that embrace his forgiveness, serve the Lord today, and he can use you beyond your wildest imagination, because truth be told, it's kind of ridiculous that he would bring the line of Christ through Tamar, a Canaanite that doesn't appear to ever do anything godly. God's bigger than us. Don't you let your past dictate your future. Trust the Lord with that. Remember the title of the message, and I'm done. They indulged their flesh versus honoring God. And I'm convinced that the issue with Israel, they just wouldn't be separate. And God got them to be separate. Final thought. What does God call us to? Holiness. What will destroy our effectiveness for the honor and glory of God? Sin. Sin is a lack of separation from the world. Sin separates us from God, unites us with the world. If we walk in holiness, it'll unite us with God and separate us from the world. We can be so tough on Judah, we can be so tough on Onan, we can be so tough on these guys in this chapter, but what God's called us to is holiness. I told a young man the other day, I do believe this. It's as easy just to go, I'm not doing it. I'm going to honor God. And maybe you need to say that 100,000 times in one day. I'm not doing it. I'm going to honor God. I'm not doing it. I'm going to honor God. and then cast down any imaginations. Don't think about it. I'm not doing it. I'm going to honor God. You'll never regret it for all of eternity. Will we be separate? Or will God have to put us in bondage so that we finally obey? Whatever it takes, oh God. But I ask him this. I prefer obedience. Help me to love you, to see your love, that I will obey. But I know this. I know loving you. Clay, whatever it takes. Slavery, just obey. Lee, whatever it takes. And God's saying, just obey. Anthony, whatever it takes, just obey. And we honor him.